This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Mr. Fu Wei, Chief Executive Officer at Seabridge Capital, a healthcare-focused private equity firm in China. He was previously head of principal investment at Far East Horizon and also a partner at Themes Investment Management. In his earlier career, he worked at Goldman Sachs, Macquarie Group, and also Temasek Holdings. He talked with me last week in Hong Kong. We talked about his company's investment in the Chinese pharmaceutical company and also a medical device maker. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, Wei. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So Seabridge Capital, it's a rather new name. A lot of investors haven't really heard about the firm. Maybe you can first give us a brief introduction.
Seabridge Capital is a China-focused healthcare fund, and we only focus on healthcare sector in China. And our name is from, C stands for commercialize and consolidate in China. But, the reason we have this name because we are having a very differentiated strategy, which is investing into growth stage healthcare companies, which is heavily relying on commercialized product in China, which is having more and more increasingly affordability. And this is our investment theme. And also, healthcare sector in China is very, very fragmented, which is waiting to be consolidated. So this is another trend that we are trying to catch up. So this is the reason we have, commercialized and consolidated in China. That's why Seabridge.
I see. So your background is very interesting. You have worked in all sorts of different investment firms before, including Far East Horizon, Themes Investment Management, Goldman Sachs, Standard Chartered, Macquarie, Temasek. Tell us, how did your past work experience lead to the establishment of your current fund?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I have experience in working in all sorts of, institutions, European firms, American Wall Street firms, sovereign fund, state enterprise, and also, a startup fund. So this kind of experience really gave me a vast experience about or sort of, investment strategies. What Standard Chartered Bank is thinking, what Goldman is thinking about investment, and what Temasek is thinking about investment, etc. And I also have cross-sector investment experience. I did infrastructure investments before, consumer goods, financial institutions, etc. And this kind of experience led me to a thought about 3 years ago that it's a timing for China healthcare. Which was not a hot topic before, but as you can see, we are probably one of the first few GPs that are having a dedicated healthcare strategy, and that's actually gave us a lot of lead time.
And starting when did you focus on healthcare?
It's only Seabridge time. Before Seabridge, I was a generalist, and I don't have any single investment experience in healthcare.
Well, so it's obvious because there are a lot of people in China and many, many more are getting sick. So can you just lay the background of, it's an obvious trend. Every smart investor can see that healthcare is going to just boom in China. But just give us some numbers.
To explain to you why we have a focus on this, the reason is I think two reasons. In general, this is a sector 10 years behind other sectors. As I evidenced the boom of TMT, the boom of financial institutions, the boom of consumer goods, which all started in 2004, 2005. It's, you know, past 10 years, the golden 10 years. And this sector is just 10 years delay. So this is the reason that I feel that this sector will experience similar things as other sectors. One thing is, you know, it's definitely from the demand side. If you look at, you know, the healthcare sector, the consumers are mainly 55 years old and above. So this is the older people demand. So this is the reason that the demand is actually delayed by 10 years. 10 years ago, who consumed healthcare products? It's mainly 1940s and 1950s generation. This group actually is the poorest group in China. But you look at today, the richest group in China, which are 1960s generation, who were 45 in the past one decade, who made the majority of the wealth, who bought, you know, all the luxury goods, luxury apartments all over the world. And they are now 55 years old. And they are now looking for premium solutions in healthcare. And so this is the reason that the affordability for, you know, China healthcare is just started. And this is, you know, the trend that we really want to ride on. And secondly, you know, from the supply side, healthcare or biotech, it's, you know, to be an entrepreneur, you need to be mature enough as well. So it's unlike TMT sector, you can build a business at the age of 25 or even younger than that. But for healthcare biotech company, you'll need to be, you know, US PhD, medical doctor, and 10, 15 years working with big pharma biotech company, and then you will only be ready. So it's a 45 years old business. And 10 years ago, we don't have such talents ready. The reason is that, you know, the first generation Chinese going overseas to study is actually, you know, early 1990. And this group of people get their PhD postdoc done before 2000. 10 years working experience, 2010, they are, this group of talents is only ready. So this is the reason that the Chinese biotech was started much later than before. So it's also, you know, another reason that the sector is 10 years delayed. So given all this, I would think that this sector will repeat other sectors 10 years ago, which will go through this, 20% growth and also consolidation stage. So this is the reason that we build up such an investment strategy.
Give us a sense of your funds that you manage now. So how many funds you manage and how much capital?
Yeah, so far we manage about $700 million. My fund one is $200 million plus $100 million co-investment. And we also manage a venture fund, which is called iBridge. It's $100 million. It's led by Mr. Jimmy Wei, who was a partner at Kleiner Perkins. And we are at Growth Fund 2, which is $300 million target fund. And we are oversubscribed.
I see. So I see recently you have made some, made a follow-on investment into a Chinese pharmaceutical startup called Ascletis.
Yes. That is a typical example of, commercialization in China story. That company was doing hepatitis C. And we all know that Gilead Sciences, it's a $100 billion company in the U.S., huge success in hepatitis C. Their hepatitis C drug, Sovaldi, achieved $11 billion sales in 2013 and $20 billion sales in 2014. And we have, this company licensed a compound which is 99% similar to them from Roche and Presidio. And it has completed a clinical, trial in China and is about to be approved. And China has 40 million patients waiting to be cured. In the U.S., it's only 4 million. So it's a huge market. And we are about 2 years ahead of Gilead launching in China. And I believe, this company will be extremely successful. Don't even talk about, $11 billion sales. Even we can achieve like $500 million sales, this company will be multi-billion, in valuation. And so this kind of story will keep repeating, in terms of talking about technology transfer from US to China, and which is a huge, you know, consumer market with increasing affordability, as we discussed.
As you said, this is a typical deal involving technology transfer from developed markets like the US. How much innovation, like real innovation, are you seeing among Chinese biopharmaceutical companies?
Actually, you know, innovation is always good, and some, you know, it's a magic word. Actually, in investments, I try to avoid first-in-class innovation. Whenever there is a first-in-class global innovation, that involves risks. And that's, frankly, sometimes it's like gambling. And even the best scientist in the world can't predict whether it can go through FDA approval or not. How can a fund manager, you know, predict that? It's hard to happen. And this is a reason that we tend to, you know, do technology transfer kind of investments. The compound has been tested in the U.S., and we just transferred it to China. And Americans, you know, are okay to take this kind of drug, and it's effective on Americans. Well, very likely it works on Chinese. So this is a simple concept. And it's also the same, you know, investment philosophy in other sectors 10 years ago. When you just started, try to be a good follower. Like when Chinese pick up auto industry, we build up joint venture with Volkswagen, with Toyota, with Audi. We learn from them first. Then we develop something of our own. It's the same as TMT. When Baidu started its Google model, when Alibaba started its Amazon eBay model, it's the same thing, you know, for healthcare. We are so far behind. Why don't we catch up first instead of, you know, develop something really innovative, which is quite risky?
What some other competitors are there in China with similar business models as Lattice?
Yes, I believe so. There are multiple companies that are doing, you know, this kind of technology transfer business, and
but specifically in hepatitis C.
We get the best product, so we don't see any competitors in this field, except the global leader, which is Gilead. So this is the reason, you know, in hepatitis C, we don't see any competitors.
So
except a few that are trying to develop their own compound, but they are very slow in terms of development. And I don't think, you know, China FDA will be confident enough to approve a drug that, you know, was discovered by a local Chinese scientist.
So what are the major risks do you see in the process leading to the official launch of the drug in China?
I don't see any risks. It's just a matter of time, because clinical trial showed 96% and above efficacy, and it should be a done deal.
A regulatory approval?
Right, it's a done deal. We are actually given a fast track, and even before we finish our clinical phase 3, we are requested to submit a new drug approval, which shows that you know, the regulatory you know, agency is already comfortable with the clinical trial results.
What is your current expected timeline for the
first half, for sure?
First half of
this year.
This year, it will be launched to market.
Yes.
And then what are some expected you know, sales volume first year, second year? Do you have any targets or expectation?
Yeah, we do have target, we do have expectation, but that relates to lots of factors, such as whether we can get enrolled in the reimbursement list, you know.
So just to make sure, so makes this clear that so the patients who buy this drug can be reimbursed by their public health benefits related to their work or their pension, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. It also depends on our pricing strategy, which I think the company is in the best position to tell the public.
How is the scandal a few years back regarding drug companies marketing their medicine to hospitals and doctors in China? the impact how you're going to market your drug to the market. Sorry, market the drug to the doctors and hospitals.
I think that's more related to generics. Actually, for our drug, we don't need to do that. Look, you know, there are 40 million patients waiting to be cured, and our solution is the best. And the second best is 12 months treatment, less than 50-60% of efficacy. Side effect is fever during the treatment, and we are 95% efficacy, 3 months treatment, almost zero side effect. Why don't they choose us? Why should we use the commission or kickbacks to grow the sales? It's not necessary.
But still, you should have a strategy of at least educating the doctors
on
this new drug that's coming to the market.
Right. We do have a marketing plan, and we heard the team from Roche who are very experienced. And this will help us a lot.
What's your long-term expectation regarding this company's development in China? Is this just a one-drug play?
No, of course not. They just take $100 million, and this will be purely used for new drug licensing and discovery. So we are not limited to hepatitis C, which is already a done deal. And we're also looking into other therapeutic areas, such as hepatitis B, which is an even bigger market, such as NASH, such as liver cancer.
How involved are you in terms of participating in the company's daily management?
Oh, actually, we are not involved in the day-to-day management, but we do provide strategic advice to the company, and also support them from new product licensing and introduction. Give you some background that as of today we have four offices in Beijing, Shanghai. Shanghai is the main, and we also have two offices in U.S. One in Boston, one in San Diego. We have two senior colleagues there, our partners, who are in combination they have 40 years experience. And they all being involved in biotech, big pharma for 20 years for each. And they are very experienced and connected in the U.S. side. They are helping our portfolio company in China to look for good products from U.S. side, where 90% of the innovation are from U.S. So this is we give them lots of support in this as well.
Now, specifically on the deal earlier this month, Seabridge Capital led a $100 million new funding round, and that follows $35 million funding round about a year ago, or more than a year ago. So there are some other investors also participated in the $100 million new round. Could you disclose how much you put into the company?
You mean how much capital Seabridge put in?
Yeah.
I can tell you, majority of the money is from Seabridge and Seabridge LPs. I think 90% and above the capital is from Seabridge and Seabridge LPs. Yeah. Basically, this round is just Seabridge led round.
Okay, and also very interesting in the co-investor includes Qianhai Equity Investment Fund Management and also the Family Foundation of Focus Media's founder Jason Jiang.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Actually, they are all my investors.
Oh, I see. So they're actually the limited partners in your fund, and they also co-invested on this deal.
Yep. So it's a friends and family deal. So this is a good thing about Seabridge, actually. When we believe in, an investment story, when we believe in a company, we will help them to raise capital. And this will save the entrepreneur lots of time and let them focus on their day-to-day operation. And I also think that in terms of Chinese biotech, those kind of companies who can raise sufficient capital will be very successful. And the capital is definitely you know, critical part in, you know, company development. So we are trying to give, you know, our portfolio company this kind of support for them to, you know, purely focus on their business and have sufficient capital to deploy in their future development.
How do you incorporate the consolidation part of your strategy in this deal?
In terms of consolidation, I think it's a natural story for this company because they are already, you know, the leading player in Habitat C, and they will become probably the most important antiviral business in China. And I believe those generics company, those, you know, company with poorer products will face lots of challenge. And when that happens, Asclepius will be in a position to acquire them. And actually, we are already in discussion to make some acquisitions of about, you know, the last generation hepatitis C company, hepatitis C product. And this is always in our mind. It's just about, you know, when to do that.
So once you do get into the stage of potentially buying other companies, the 100 million is a large amount of money, but when you, you know, go to strategic acquisition, it's not a lot of money. So how would you finance those kind of deals?
That's straightforward. This company is actually lots of attractions from the market to they're trying to invest. It's just that we are just raising 100. And whenever there's a good target, we can always go back to the market and raise capital. And not even talking about we could be IPO'd anytime, you know, soon in the next 2 years. And that will provide, you know, further capital raising capability.
When you say IPO, where are you talking about? Inside China or Hong Kong?
Whichever way, actually, you know, this company is with very strong governance. The company CEO was, you know, GSK trained senior executives, and we are actually qualified to be listed in any of the stock exchange,
including in A shares.
Including A shares.
So the company has been profitable for.
We are going to be profitable very soon.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But then you have to count the 2 year waiting list.
2 years. Yes. I'm not sure. Actually, I think we are profitable in 2016 as well.
I see.
Yeah.
When you invested in the latest round, how would you describe the valuation of the company? How does it compare with peers? Is it, I guess it's always higher than you would like it to be, but, you know, objectively, if you can be, how do you think the valuation?
None of the good companies will be cheap. So, it's always about your confidence in the business, your confidence in the team, and I think you know, this is a reasonable valuation, and especially given my trust into Dr. Wu and their business, it has been proved to be correct for my previous round investments. The company made so much developments in just a year time. And there were people saying my last round was expensive, but not today. Nobody is saying that. It proves to be very cheap. This valuation is based on my understanding, our team's understanding about Asclepius' future and also their team's capability. I believe Asclepius will be a multi-billion dollar business for sure.
In what time? 2 years? 3 years' time?
Possible.
So is it already a $1 billion company, unicorn? Does it qualify as a unicorn now by its valuation?
I think
close.
I can't disclose this, but it's almost there.
Okay. Now let's move on to another company, which you also just announced an investment into called Anray. It's a medical equipment maker in China. Describe the investment rationale behind this deal.
This is a typical consolidation theme, and it's a buyout deal. And we have 80% of the company. And
80%?
Yep. So we are trying to use this platform as a start to acquire consumable business which are falling into the minimally invasive surgical category, which is the fastest growing medical device sector. In China, only 20-30% of the surgical operation are minimally invasive. In US, it's 70%. So this is a high growth sector.
Can you explain what is minimally invasive medical equipment versus what is the other category, like just metal? Like,
when you are doing surgical operation, previously it's all like major operations. You have like have a very big, take longer time to recover, etc. For minimally invasive, it's just using an endoscope. It's just one or two small holes, and it takes you like one month to recover, and it's easier and less painful. So this is, it's mainly like consumables under endoscope, like clippers, like knives, etc. Yeah.
And little brushes.
Something like that. And it's all one-time use, and so it's a consumable business.
So this is a very niche market. What is the competitive landscape in this small, narrow, vertical market?
It's not niche. It's actually about 3-4 billion RMB business every year. And our competitors...
3 to 4 billion RMB
in
market size?
Yep. Actually, competitors are... It's always, those multinational companies like Boston Scientific, Covidien, Olympus. They are, they are in the tier one cities. And the tier two cities are mainly domestic players. And NRA is the top two in this market. Has been in the market for 10 years. And we have a very good reputation in terms of quality of the products, etc. We are the OEM manufacturer for Boston Scientific, which shows that, the quality and the service.
What is the kind of growth rate you expect from for this market?
The market will grow 20-30% for sure.
Every year?
I think for the next 4-5 years. And I believe, Enri will grow much faster than this, especially given our support.
So you are, so this is a consolidation play. You're going to try to buy some of the smaller players, even though Enri is already, I would say, relatively small in size, as you described, 90% stake. For a 25 million investment, so that puts the company's valuation at over $35 million. So that's kind of a tiny company.
It depends on how you define it. For sure, it's not a huge company, but the thing is that this is a reason we can roll up. And if it's a huge company, the growth potential is not there. For this business, the management team we hired is underwriting 70% growth for the next 2-3 years.
Well, so, I guess this really shows how segmented this market is, because as you describe, it's 3-4 billion RMB market size. And you said this company is one of the top two, and they're only about over $30 million US dollar in value. So that just shows how segmented it is.
It is. Actually, the whole China healthcare is fragmented. It's very extremely fragmented. There are 5,000 pharma companies. It shouldn't be the case. There is no big company in China, actually. In US, when you are talking about big pharma, it's of the market cap of $100 billion. In China, $10 billion is only one or two.
And there are reasons for that, right? There's because we have all these different provinces and regions, and each of them have their own healthcare system and certain networks and all that.
This is not the reason. U.S. is there are 50 states, and each of the states is having more independent system, and China is actually more centrally controlled than the U.S. It's just because it's 10 years behind. It's like 10 years before in China, each of the city has a beer factory. And now there are only three. 10 years in China, each of the provinces has a car manufacturer. Now the top five contribute 80-90%. It's the same as like dairy business. Each of the city, there is a dairy manufacturer. Today, there are only three, like Guangming, etc. It's just, with the development of the standard and the quality, the consolidation is happening simultaneously because those who can't catch up, they just lose the market. And it will happen in healthcare. If you can't have a 95% efficacy hepatitis C drug, all other hepatitis C generics, low quality drug manufacturers will just lose out. So this will, with the development of this technology, it will also, drive the consolidation to happen, in this market. It's always the case. So this is the whole theme behind our investment philosophy.
Interesting. So, okay. So now we know the deals that you actually made announcement about are in the pharmaceutical and medical devices sectors. Do you, your future deals will also focus on this too? And what are some other angles, some potential other type of companies that you will invest in?
Well, I'm mainly focused on pharmaceutical drug development and the medical devices. And we'll also do some hospital services, but that's more asset-light kind of strategy.
Yeah. What do you mean asset-light?
Which means we don't invest in like infrastructure type of hospitals, like general hospitals, etc. That's not what we target. When we invest in hospital service, mainly on technology, it's instead of providing general service.
Can you give me an example? So like a hospital, like information, IT infrastructure type?
For example, it's like specialty clinical franchise, these kind of things. Instead of Guangdong Renmin Yiyuan or whatever, this kind of diseases.
Like dental, eye hospital?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
What is your outlook for each of the three segments under healthcare in China? What's your expectations for the pharmaceutical, medical devices, and healthcare services in the next 5 years? How are they going to evolve?
I think for, let's put service aside, it's quite different. Talking about pharmaceutical and the medical device, I think pharmaceutical next 5 years is mainly about catching up. And 5 years later, the other 5 years probably will be consolidation, because for the drug development is entry barriers higher, and China is, and the development cycle is also longer, so China is even further behind the US.
So when you say catching up, you mean the same thing as you did with Ascletis, which is franchising,
yeah,
or licensing certain kind of drug from the US or Europe and bring it back to China.
Right, not licensing, but also like maybe we develop a similar compound, get over the patent.
Not generic drug.
I'm talking about patented drug.
Oh, okay.
To get over patent, one thing is you buy their patent. The other is develop something similar and get over their patent. Beta Pharma is, this kind of case. And for medical devices, I think catching up is almost done. Okay, because entry barrier for medical devices is lower. It's always about incremental innovation. And the patent protection is difficult. And the approval process is shorter. So medical device, the catching up period is mostly done. So next 5 years is more on consolidation. So these are the key trend that we are trying to capture.
People have been talking about consolidation for many years. It's happening very slowly. Why do you think that is?
As I said, it's you need to come in with the right timing. It's timing is very important. If look at other sectors, 10 years ago, people always feel consolidation is difficult, and today it's all consolidated, and it's just happened in the past 5 years. And I believe, you know, given all these reasons that I described, you know, medical devices is about the timing. And 5 years ago, medical devices start to, you know, catch up the U.S. standard, catch up, you know, global standard by, you know, even acquiring overseas assets in orthopedics, in, you know, cardiovascular, you know, etc. I think, you know, this leads to, you know, this 5 years consolidation.
Everybody wants to consolidate others. Who will be the eventual ultimate winner and actually become the consolidator instead of being consolidated by other people?
This is straightforward. It's just, if you have two things, you have the best team and you have the capital support, then you will be the consolidator. If either way, you know, if you miss either of them, you know, you can't be consolidating. So this is the reason that we are backing, you know, the right team to consolidate and give them sufficient capital and buy out a company that could create synergy.
Foreign medical device companies, like you say, still dominate the market? Or they, you know, they're in top tier cities?
I would say that today, you know, it's always the case, because it's not only foreign medical device, foreign pharma, it's the same, that, you know, they have the best technologies, they have the best products. So they start this, when they access China, they start from first tier cities. They start educating the first tier cities, you know, the best doctors, and who will introduce the products to the patients. And now, you know, after, for example, for some medical devices, after it's fully introduced to the first tier cities, then they are, you know, targeting to be commercialized in second tier cities and third tier cities, which will be, you know, some delay, because the doctors there are not that experienced or educated on how to use, you know, certain kinds of medical devices. But when going to that stage, I think domestic companies are, you know, better positioned, especially they have a better price compared to multinational company, similar quality of the products. And the big doctors in China has already, you know, buying this kind of products. It doesn't take you too much effort to educate the second, third tier city doctors. So this is, you know, the market I think the domestic medical devices company will focus on. And this is where growth is.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Wei, for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.